everybody, and welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Adam Verrier, and today I'm out for a walk with Alice Tower Knapp. Alice has recently written a book about the Nordic Skiing Association of Anchorage, and it's called On Track. Alice, thanks for coming out and meeting me here today.
Hey, it's really great to be here, Adam. This is one of my favorite places. It's where I learned to ski.
We're at Russian Jack today.
Yes.
And Russian Jack Springs Park here in Anchorage. You were just saying it's one of the places you learned to ski.
Yes. I grew up in Anchorage, born and raised here, and my parents were original members of the Nordic Ski Club of Anchorage, which is what it was called at that time. And I grew up skiing at the potato patch here at Russian Jack, way before it was a golf course.
Where was the potato patch?
The potato patch was sort of in the corner of the park near the greenhouse. It's that upper field there. And it was part of the prison farm. And minor offenders were stationed at Russian Jack, and they worked the potato patch there. And when the ski trails were first developed in around 1961 by Dick Mize, who was a biology teacher at East High, he wanted some ski trails, and Russian Jack was nearby, so he started brushing out the trails at that point. But originally, we spent a lot of time dodging old potato stalks.
Okay, yeah.
You know, on the potato patch. And eventually, the chalet was built in, the original chalet was built in 1968, and more, the golf course came to be. But it almost became the zoo site. And
It was the prison potato patch. Did it ever almost become the city prison, or
no,
was it never?
No,
never.
It was always just for minor offenders, a work farm kind of place.
Okay, the prison was elsewhere.
Prison
come
was
over
elsewhere.
Here and tend the
yeah,
potatoes.
The park was always intended to be a recreational place.
Mm.
At one point, it was slated to become the zoo, and that was probably the first time that the Nordic Ski Club made a big push to activate for their own ski trails there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go for a walk.
Okay.
Why don't you, where you want to, I'll just let you lead and we'll just walk around.
Okay.
You take me
well,
around.
Well, we're going to go down the ski hill, which at one point had a rope tow, and
now, it sounds like we're jumping ahead here. The rope tow must have gone in when?
Oh, no clue. Probably.
But by that time, it wasn't going to be the zoo anymore.
No.
And it wasn't the potato patch.
When the chalet was built, that was about the time the golf course came into being, and that's when probably the rope tow was put in. So I would guess around 1968.
Okay.
And the rope tow was very popular. It was on the golf course hill here, right by the current chalet. The old chalet burned down in 1979 and was rebuilt in the new location in 1983, I believe.
Okay, and if you're a current user of Russian Jack in the winter, you probably know it as the sledding hill. We're walking down
right.
It now.
Right, yeah, the main hill that's right next to the chalet. And as you go down that hill, the springs or the creek is right at the bottom. And the original trail kind of wound through the woods. It was very skinny, windy trail. It had a bunch of herringbone hills. You can still find that original trail if you weave around in the woods here. There are some pretty good stories. Margie Mahoney, a two-time Olympian, when she was first learning how to ski, she was skiing, I believe, for the Diamond High School ski team, fell into the creek, didn't quite make the corner going down a hill. So there's a lot of good stories about Russian Jack days. Moose were an issue, as they are now.
Yes, they still are.
Yeah.
And was Russian Jack the place that you first started skiing in Anchorage?
No, actually, my family was present at the very first race, which was the first race was put on by Stumpy Faulkner down at Bootleggers Cove Clay. Bootleggers Cove.
Yeah.
And in his front yard, he hosted a race. And 3 days later, the Nordic Ski Club was organized. So he was sort of the guy that got the ball rolling on the Nordic Ski Club. And that was in January of 1964.
January of 64.
Right.
Okay.
And by that time, Dick Mize was here. He was I don't think we'll go on this trail.
Okay, yeah,
it
I'm looking
a
at
little
a
muddy.
Mud patch down there.
Yeah, that is one of the old trails, but it's pretty much underwater right now. Stumpy Faulkner hosted this race that went across the train tracks by the lagoon.
Okay.
It was before the lagoon was there. He got permission from the railroad to run this race across the tracks over to what is now the Atwood Estate, but back then was called Forest Park Country Club.
And there was a ski hill there, right? A rope
there
tow or something?
There was a little ski hill with a rope tow. He had Dick Mize and Joe Colla set a course that kind of wound around the country club and then over to Romig Hill, kind of near where West High is above there, which also had a rope tow. And there was skiing. People kind of took their skis and went on old Jeep trails and things like that.
You mean prior to 64?
Prior to 64, but there was no active designated ski trails at that point.
Okay, so people were just going skiing wherever they could, felt like going skiing, wherever there was snow, wherever they were. And there were there some trails cut in town? Any place sort of recreationally on people's land?
Yeah, there were. The military had an active training program with a biathlon, U.S. biathlon team, and they were stationed at Fort Richardson, and they had a wonderful trail system both at Moose Run golf course and up the hill at Arctic Valley at the biathlon trails there, which they generously allowed us to use in the early days of the Nordic Ski Club. We had early races at Moose Run.
Okay, and did that start prior to 64 then, or was 64 kind of the genesis? That was kind of the start of everything. People were going skiing in the 50s and 60s, or not so much?
Well, people were skiing, but it was more like on touring skis with cable minings and...
Oh, we got another lake here.
Yep.
We're walking around the lower part of Russian Jack Springs Golf Course here.
Yeah, and we're about to go into the woods near where some of the fun little ski trails are at Russian Jack.
Yeah, you just lead the way. Tell me where,
right.
You
Let's
lead the way.
Right, let's go across there.
Okay. So you started skiing. You were in that first race in 1964, I understand.
Well, actually, I was 4 years old, and
okay.
I don't think I actually was in that race, but my family was. My sister was around 8 or 9. No, she would have been about 10 at that point, and she related that she got her skis stuck in the train track trestle where the tracks switched.
Oh, right, right.
And, so she didn't have the happiest experience on that first race, but...
Didn't have to spend the night out there, though.
No, didn't. You know, she was rescued. And but a lot of people showed up. Over 100 people showed up for this first race that Stumpy Faulkner put on. And
really?
From that, 3 days later, they organized the Nordic Ski Club. He was active in the Girdwood Alyeska downhill scene. And
okay.
He just saw cross country as a real natural fit for Anchorage. There
so
was already high school downhill alpine races at that point.
Yeah.
And
were those all down at Alyeska, or was any of that going on here in Anchorage?
Up at Arctic Valley, had active military site, and Anchorage Ski Club had an active alpine area too. So there was a lot of opportunity for alpine skiing. Not really any organized Nordic cross-country skiing beyond the biathlon team stationed at Fort Rich.
Okay, so the idea was bring in some Nordic as a balance to all the alpine skiing going on around.
Well,
here.
Yeah, and they also wanted to field a full team to junior nationals, and in order to do that, they needed to have a separate club that could do the sanctioned USSA ski races.
So it's kind of the inverse of what's going on now, where to ski at NCAAs, you need a full team at both alpine and cross-country in order to score any points. So it sounds like we've come full circle on
right,
that.
Right, yeah. So initially, the Nordic Ski Club worked very closely with USSA, United States Ski Association, and the alpine forces. They used to do fundraisers together, and all with the thought of combining the teams. Now those competitions are held separately. So that's, we're not as closely affiliated with the alpine groups now.
Right, right. Well, what is your relationship with the club? You've written this book. It's called On Track, and it you've written it over the, I think this was a, well, this was a pandemic project for you, and I think the book is just coming out now.
That's right. That's right. Little did I know what I was getting into when I started this. I had a conversation with my friend Jim Rankert, who also grew up in Anchorage skiing, and we were kind of bemoaning the fact that we have all these wonderful ski trails on public parklands, but people aren't aware of what went into the building of the trails and who did it and, you know, just the whole history behind the club and the people behind the club. And so I sort of had this conversation with Jim in my mind, and when COVID hit, I had time, and I'm retired. I'm a retired teacher. I grew up with the club. I went on the first ski train. I was at the first race, you know, so I had a lot of background with the club. I had been a president, former president of the club. So I knew a lot about the club, but boy, I didn't know everything.
Right. Yeah.
And so I just grabbed every box I could find at the office and brought it up to our cabin, and I just started researching. And originally I just planned to write a, you know, a history, a summary of what I learned.
Yeah, a few paragraphs.
A few pages maybe, but you know, nothing, no big deal. I had no plans to write a book. But as I researched, it was like, I can't talk about the history of the club without talking about the people that helped create the club. And the more I learned about the people that create the club, I learned about the trails and all their development, and then the interactions with other groups, and then all the different parts of the club, like the jumping, the biathlon, the junior Nordic, you know, just all the little elements. And I was, boy, you know, there's a lot there.
Right.
And so, yeah. And the events that Nordic puts on. And so after all of this, the project grew. And
there was nothing you could do about it, it sounds like.
Well, you know, I'm one of those people that I put my mind on something and it's like, it's got to be done. Am I the brisk person to do it? Not necessarily, but
yeah,
I wanted it. It needed to be recorded. The founders and shakers are getting old and they want that history preserved. And so it was a lot of fun. I talked to so many of what I call the movers and shakers of the club. Yeah. And we talked and talked, and I learned so much about all the, you know, efforts that went into the track setting, the grooming, the early trail building, the races, the tours, you know, just every little element of the club. And we are going up a very steep, this was the old Herringbone Hill on the 2.5 kilometer course.
Okay, so is this part of the original trail here?
Yeah, this is.
Okay. And we're in the woods here. We're to the to the east of the chalet. We've got some campsites ahead of us. We're to the east of the chalet, and we are we've just crossed the paved multi-use trail, which comes through here,
which didn't get built until I think the 80s sometime, maybe the late 70s.
Okay.
But yeah, so we have this series of hills. I think we might have gone down that one and up this one.
Oh, this is pretty, I mean, it's pretty rugged stuff. You don't see trails like this much anymore.
No, mostly... I mean, these were back in the skinny trail days where, you know, the grooming meant people went out and skied in the trail, and that was our race trail.
Yeah.
A lot's changed. The equipment's changed dramatically. We might not get quite the severe winters that we used to, unfortunately.
Yeah, back in the little ice age of the 70s.
Right, yeah, exactly. But it's, you know, Russian Jacks is a gem of a place because it's on the east side of town. It's accessible by, you know, every direction. And, you know, Dick Mize and Joe Calla, who was the PE teacher at Clark Junior High, they brushed out this trail, got parents of the East High skiers and Clark skiers to help, and started a dynasty. I mean, some of our early you know, top performers, this was the trail that they
learned to ski on
and became, you know.
Yeah. Well, people like yourself, because you went off to college at Middlebury, and you were an all-star skier there at Middlebury.
Yeah, I did well through college. but I always, you know, my heart was here in Anchorage, and, you know, I have a strong passion for skiing.
Yeah.
And I guess this is one way I can share it, is by putting this book together. It's been a big project, but one that I feel very good about, because now at least we have a record.
Right. Yeah. Well, you had mentioned that you'd mentioned some of the movers and shakers, as you call them, the people who have meant a lot for the club. I guess one of my questions is, why do we need a club? Why is there a ski club in Anchorage? If you had back in the old days, you already had people out skiing.
Right.
Although it doesn't sound like it was very organized since back then.
Right.
Of course, this has morphed into a town in which you have a lot of ski clubs. You have ski training groups that use the city land.
Uh-huh.
But there is still a Nordic Skiing Association of Anchorage.
Right.
And do you happen to know, I don't know, but do you know how many members approximately there are in the ski club today?
As of last spring, there were about 3,400, I believe.
Okay.
And you know, what's interesting about the Nordic Skiing Association, which used to be called the Nordic Ski Club of Anchorage, was that we went from maybe 30, 40 people at the first meeting in 1964. By 10 years later, there were 2,000 people, members
Oh, wow.
in the club. And the Nordic Ski Club functioned as a social club. It hosted tours. It had potlucks on their monthly meetings. The monthly meetings would be totally packed because, you know, Anchorage at that time didn't have a lot of different recreational opportunities. Nordic skiing really took off in a big way there because it was a family social event to go to the meetings. They would have slideshows of tours. They would have waxing demonstrations, winter camping classes, lessons. It provided a lot of opportunities. Today, the Nordic functions kind of in a different role. I call it the mother club.
Yeah.
We have Winter Stars and APUNSC, UAA ski team. We have a lot of good, strong, wonderful programs, A&R, and they function more as the social kind of connection, the training clubs for skiers. But Nordic provides the amenities. Nordic provides the groomed trails. Mm. The groomed trails are on parkland, but it's Nordic that grooms 160 kilometers of trails. The municipality of Anchorage grooms the bike trails, and Russian Jack, but Nordic grooms Hillside, Service, Kincaid, some of the multi-use trails like the Tour Trail. And if it wasn't for Nordic, all these other clubs wouldn't have come here and wouldn't exist here.
Yeah, who's going to ski race if there aren't any ski trails that are
right,
built?
Right, yeah, and they are us. I mean, you know, people who are part of the APU Masters Group or Winter Stars or Alaska Nordic Racing or the Biathlon Club, they all are Nordic members too, generally, because they know that Nordic provides the opportunity to ski on wonderful groomed trails. And really, Anchorage is known as one of the best North American ski areas because of the Nordic Ski Club and the trails and the grooming. It's really become a mecca.
Yeah. Well, I've traveled a lot of places to ski, and there isn't any place like Anchorage. And I include Europe in that, too. Even in Europe, you generally need to get up in the mountains to get to the big ski trail systems. It's very rare that they're in the city. Oslo, of course,
right.
has a really great trail system, and Trondheim has one too, but Anchorage is kind of unique in that way.
And another unique thing about Anchorage and our ski opportunities is that you are not charged every time you go out on a ski trail like you might at Stowe, Vermont, or, you know, other places around the U.S. or Canada. Instead, we have a voluntary grooming track pin program where you can contribute to the cost of grooming the trails. Well, the grooming the trails and the snowmaking out at Kincaid is horribly expensive. The equipment is very high-end equipment that requires a lot of, you know, expertise in operation and maintenance, and it all costs money.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people, even if you're not a skier, if you, you know, walk on the multi-use trails, if you mountain bike on Far North Bicentennial Park and go along the tour trail, if you, you know, walk your dog in the summer at Kincaid where the trails are brushed by the Nordic operations crew, all that stuff is the mother club, is Nordic Skiing Association. And yeah, I wax pretty, you know, enthusiastic about it, but boy, this club is amazing. I mean, it really, the people, and most are volunteers that have created this just wonderful organization.
Yeah. Well, if you're just tuning in, my name's Adam Verrier. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Radio.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Well, if you're just joining us, my name's Adam Verrier. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Radio, and I'm speaking with Alice Tower Knapp. She's a lifetime member of the Nordic Skiing Association of Anchorage, and she's just written a book that's called Track, that's about the Nordic Skiing Association of Anchorage. In the early part of the conversation, we've talked a little bit about some of the people who have been involved in making this club what it is. Are there any people that kind of come to mind as being like extremely influential with the ski club?
Absolutely. Barney Seiler was one of the founding members of the club. He is the Barney of Barney's Sports Chalet.
Yeah, the Barney's Sports Chalet, Barney.
And he was basically the only source in town, or good source, for ski equipment back in the early days of the club. But he did far more than that. He led tours. He taught waxing lessons at meetings. He held ski lesson classes, winter survival classes. He was a busy guy. He would often lead three tours on a weekend and scout them out a couple days before to make sure that the terrain was acceptable. We're walking right now down the end run of what used to be a small jump at Russian Jack, and I'm kind of looking. That looks like it was the jump hill, and perhaps that was.
Yeah, we're just down below the chalet now, just to the west side, sort of the, I guess, the southwest side of the chalet.
Yeah, in the late 60s, they put in the jump. It was only in operation for a couple years, I think. And then it was taken down, and eventually the jumps at Hilltop were built. But this also became a sledding hill, where once I was totally knocked out by a bunch of military men on inner tubes that came barreling into me. So
when you were on your way back up?
No, oh. I was sitting at the bottom. My sled had stopped, and they had a lot more force going down the hill. Yeah. So
well, this is clearly an outrun, and I guess it wouldn't be that obvious, but now I can see that there's a flat area in it and the outrun that goes down into the trees. Do you know how big a jump it was here? Do you have any idea?
I want to say 15 meters.
Hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't a big jump, but it was kind of built into the hill. It didn't have a tower or anything.
A big tower.
Yeah.
Right. I think back in those days, ski jumping was a bigger sport or a more integral part of ski sports than it is now. Perhaps ski jumping has become more
specialized.
Yeah,
well, it used to be part of the four events of collegiate skiing. Back in the 50s and 40s, skiers were expected to do four sports. all four ski events, jumping, alpine, Nordic, and or downhill too. So yeah. So four events.
And I guess it's a sport that's sort of become gradually more specialized, in which you have special ski jumpers, special alpine skiers, and cross-country skiers, and all of them train differently and are kind of built differently for the sport.
Other kind of notable early pioneers of the Nordic Ski Club that are definitely worth mentioning is Sven Johansson, who was the U.S. biathlon coach that was stationed at Fort Rich. He was quite an amazing athlete from Sweden originally, who was quite a master of technique, and he used to hold training camps up at Hatcher Pass, where they often had early season training for the aspiring juniors. I was too young at the time, but I know my sister participated in these clinics, and I used to stand on the side and see if I could learn anything. He wrote a couple manuals about ski technique, and above all, he believed in cross training way before cross training was a thing. Everything from strength training to playing soccer to hiking mountains. He was an all-around athlete, and he made sure his biathletes were that way also. They used to run from Fort Rich to the top of Arctic Valley Road before they started their ski workout.
Oh, before the workout, that's before.
Yeah, that was a warm-up. So Sven was real important to the early days. Judy and George Moorline were early pioneers of the Nordic Ski Club. Judy was USSA president for Alaska Division for quite a few years. George was our first track setter, volunteer, with an old Diablo snow machine. He would go out with his ear flap hat and pipe in his mouth and groom the trails. And he was a good friend of my parents. He is a good, well, my parents are deceased, but he is still alive. And George, in his gruff way, always said he only did it because of his sons, the wretches, he called them.
The little wretches, I think
little
I read
wretches,
in your book.
Yeah. Right. But really, George did a whole lot more than that. He was secretary of the North American Championships that were held here in the 70s up at the Biathlon Trail. He was secretary of Nordic Ski Club and just did a lot of trail work and grooming and things. So, you know, those kind of people, they don't look for notoriety, but when you start reading newsletters, you learn a lot about just the behind-the-scenes involvement that so many people had. As time has gone on, you know, new people have kind of come into the fold and taken on some of these roles that the pioneers did. For example, Bill Spencer and Jim Galanis designed the Spencer Trail up on Hillside.
And the Spencer Loop at Kincaid, too, I think. Or the,
The Leakish
Trail, right.
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there are a lot of families, too. Louis Strutz was an early president at Nordic Ski Club. And his involvement here at Russian Jack was kind of fun because he was an employee of the municipality of Anchorage, I believe Parks and Rec. And he appropriated the first lights that appeared at Russian Jack before the golf course.
And so they were donated by the city, so
to speak. The city maybe called them obsolete so that he could use them for Russian Jack. I'm not quite sure how it all panned out, but Louis Strutz had his daughters were some of the early fast racers. You know, the Nordic Ski Club activated with the USSA, United States Ski Association, to have the first girls at junior national competitions. And our girls really did well. The first relay team of Debbie and Sharon Strutz, Jeannie Whitmore, and Barbara Britch won the junior nationals relays and had the top four fastest time as in the individual.
Oh, wow. When was this?
And that was in about 1967. Hmm. And if it hadn't been for Marion Richter kind of pushing the fact, her daughter was a good racer and was up and coming, and Marion kind of says, you know, why can't girls go to junior nationals and why can't we support them at the club level?
Yeah, sometimes we can forget that it wasn't that long ago when
right.
girls and women were not
and this was
competing.
Before Title IX or right around Title IX, and yeah. and so many things were fairly new,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
if not brand new, and which is kind of cool that Anchorage was at the forefront of women's athletics.
You mentioned that you mentioned the light poles that we're walking down the fairway here on Russian Jack at Russian Jack Springs Park at the golf course.
Right.
This park is used, it's a multi-use park, of course. It's in the middle of East Anchorage. There's a lot of cross-country running races out here, and I think a lot of people who come out here for running. You have the ski trail during the winter, and it's got lights, as we see, and of course it's a sledding hill, and it's a golf course too.
Right.
But the lights, you said Lou Strutz was instrumental in getting mm-hmm. those.
It's been a real kind of the way things always seem to work with Nordic is a couple people decide that something needs to happen. For example, a new loop being built or lights being put on trails or snowmaking. And they will scour whatever sources they can find to get donated equipment or companies to give them a really good deal on a piston bully. They'll buy used trucks if they need a truck to transport equipment. You know, it's an organization that is very resourceful. And
yeah.
Jeff Scott, who is a long time, over 10 years president of Nordic Skiing Association, was also
a heavy equipment guy,
right. and his company was so generous, Caterpillar, MB Construction and Caterpillar Company, they were so generous in lending the club equipment to use right. on some of their bigger projects.
And I think Mike Miller with MB Construction.
Yes, been our trails guy.
It seems
on
like
the
this
board.
Club has a history of association with heavy equipment salesmen
right.
and heavy equipment
yeah.
operators.
Exactly, volunteers that come out and help.
Right.
And what's really cool is that we have such a good rapport with the Parks and Rec and the municipality of Anchorage. But most of the trails in Anchorage are groomed by the Nordic Skiing Association. And we're only able to do that because of grants that are, you know, that we apply for, but also legislative grants too at times. But really it's the track print program that Jim and Sally Burkholder kind of got started in 1983 after the tax cap passed and Parks and Rec could no longer afford to pay a groomer. And so when that happened, that was the year we were hosting the first ever World Cup in the cross-country World Cup in North America, I believe.
Okay, out at Kincaid Park,
yeah,
the old missile site.
Right. And they knew they needed a groomer for this big deal race. I mean,
yeah.
this was a huge event for us. And they needed to figure out a way to raise money for that, and that's when the track pin program was born and has grown significantly since that.
Well,
if you are a member of the Nordic Skiing Association, you are a track pin person.
Buyer, okay,
yeah.
So membership in the club sounds like it. You're buying a track pin when you're buying a membership.
Exactly,
and
you can buy it at different levels. It's very reasonable for a basic level membership.
Yeah.
If you are a heavy trail user, you're encouraged to get a higher level Trailblazer or Trailmeister membership, which has a few perks here and there, including getting a your own copy of the new book on track.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
You get that with what, the Trailblazer, Trailmeister, something like that?
If you're a Trailblazer or Trailmeister, this is something I really insisted upon, is that you should get a copy of this book, because you're the people that really should know about the club. Mm. You probably already do, but you don't know everything.
Right, yeah.
And so I really wanted, my goal is to get the information out and for people to learn about the club. And that was one easy way to distribute the book.
That sounds like a good motivation. I've had a chance to look at the book for the last day and a half, and it's got a ton of information in there. And I know the Burkholders and the Mises and the Mahaffeys and the Richters, and I've spoken with these people quite a bit, so I know something about the history of the club. But the book has it fills in a lot of blanks for me, that's for sure.
Right, and it's been a really fun project, getting to talk to these folks who I've known for years, but I've never really sat down and spent time finding out about all their involvement in the club. Has been such a wonderful journey, and so wonderful to get to know these people better. I've been so pleased on how receptive and giving of their time they've done in this project. Jim Mahaffey is a good record keeper, let me tell you.
Right, okay.
And Jim and Sally Burkholder have kept great records about the trail building out at Kincaid. And all that stuff helped me put this book together. And it's one thing I really like about this book, and not to toot my horn, but it's skip-aroundable.
Yeah.
And as a school librarian, I used to teach my kids that it's okay on nonfiction books to go, to just pick and choose what you want to find out about. Look at the index or look at the table of contents and go where you're interested first. You can do that with this book. I mean, it's very approachable. I've spotlighted about 65 different people that in one way, shape, or form have been involved in the club.
You're mentioning a lot of trails that I think are no longer in use. Are there any ski trail systems here in Anchorage that that are no longer here that you used to enjoy skiing on that come to mind when you...
Sadly, yes. One of my favorite trails was Biathlon Trail up halfway up Arctic Valley. And it was owned by the military. It's still there, but it's totally overgrown now. After some time, I think in the 80s perhaps, or early 90s, the military stopped allowing us civilians to use the Moose Run golf course for early season skiing and the Biathlon Trail. So that's something that I would love to see us in the future try and get permission to use again. The Point Warren's Off Trail is the other special trail. It was about a 5K trail that was built where the north-south runway is now. And when the airport expanded, that trail disappeared. It was always on airport land, and we had to ask permission to use it the three or so winters that it was used in the early 70s.
Well, I guess one thing that's changed a little bit, and we're kind of getting into trails here, kind of getting off the topic of the club a little bit, but the trails, it sounds like there were a lot of these small trail systems that used to exist, and they weren't connected with one another.
Right.
One of the things that seems like has kind of changed over the decades in Anchorage is that the trail systems are connected by these multi-use trails, like the one we're walking on now. We're on a paved trail here in the middle of Russian Jack. If you live in this neighborhood, you could use this trail to connect onto the Chester Creek Trail and all the way around the Moose Loop and everything else.
And so you can go up the tour trail. And yeah.
Is that something that the ski club has had maybe an impact in making happen, sort of the connectivity of these trail systems?
Absolutely. One thing I have a section in the book that I called Issues Over Time.
Yeah.
And every time a park issue kind of came up, it seemed that the Nordic Ski Club would chime in, usually in support of getting bike trails and clubbed. And the Tudor Road Bridge would have never happened without the lobbying support of Nordic Club members. We wrote letters. Our president showed up at every possible meeting. We wanted to connect the Tour Trail to the Chester Creek Bike Trail.
I guess largely so the Tour of Anchorage ski race could get across town.
Right. And fortunately, it's also the route of the dog sled races, the Ferrandi dog sled races. So, you know, we got multiple user groups to come in with us to lobby for funding to put in the Tudor Bridge. A lot of the bike trails we heavily lobbied for.
Yeah, Tudor Road Bridge.
Right.
Is a bridge which I think is probably used more heavily by pedestrians and bike commuters than by skiers.
Absolutely.
I think there's a lot more non-skier crossings of that bridge.
And it's funny because there was a time when there was a lot of club angst about multi-use trails, and skiers were getting a little snippy about, you know, people on multi-use trails, which they were multi-use trails. And so in the book, I've got a page that appeared in the newsletter for a couple years on skiers' etiquette and how, you know, it's our trail, it's everybody's trail, not just your trail, you know, be a good person. And for the most part, I think, you know, we live in pretty good existence with other user groups. And, you know, these groups work together, the horseback riders at Far North Bicentennial Park and the skiers and the bikers. We can coexist really well. What we don't coexist well with are motorized vehicles.
Yeah.
But, you know,
that's a safety issue there.
Right. There are some trails. We would love to be able to groom up at Chugach State Park early season. Because sometimes, you know, the snow gets mountain. There's snow in the mountains a lot earlier than down here in Anchorage. Yep. But that's something we haven't accomplished yet, is permission to do that.
Yep. Well, what are some of the other things that the club does? I mean, we've talked a lot about trails and the track pin program. For obviously, the club is running that, you know, raising money through the track pin program. But what are some of the other functions that the club does for the for the Anchorage public?
When the club started out, probably it was half touring and half racing. The energies were about half and half. Touring is still a huge part of the club. It's just the quiet part of the club. Biathlon has grown and grown. We have a beautiful range out at Kincaid. And then the jumping has grown and grown. We have a beautiful facility at Hilltop Ski Area, the Carlisle Jumping Complex, that they have year-round jumping. They have a summer surface on their jumps so that they can jump in the summer. And that program has grown by leaps and bounds.
And jumping is under the umbrella, then, of the Nordic Skiing Association of Anchorage?
Yes, okay. It is. And it's just one other reason where we really want people to be members of club, even if you're not a skier, because the club benefits you in so many ways, whether it is walking your dog out at Kincaid in the summer on the brushed out trails that our Nordic operations crew keeps in good stead, hillside, where trees, spruce bark beetle trees are down, the Nordic crew takes care of that.
Yeah. While we're walking down this narrow trail, I will let you know that you're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Radio. My name is Adam Verrier, and today I'm speaking with Alice Tower Knapp, who's just written a book, which is just coming out this month. It's called Track, and it's a... It's On Track. And it's about the Nordic Skiing Association of Anchorage. So one of the other things I read about in the book that I'm kind of interested in here is the ski train. The ski train is something that's been going on, I think, for quite a few decades, and the ski club puts this ski train on. Well, tell me about that. In fact, let me get on the other side of you.
Here we go. The ski train started in 1972, but actually the ski train... there was a ski train that took skiers out to Curry, Alaska, which is past Talkeetna, in the 40s.
Oh, really?
So the Nordic ski train began in 1972. And I think the first year, 500 people rode the one train. And it was a blast.
Wow.
I was on that first train. The weather was perfect spring skiing weather. There was a ton of snow at Turnagain. Most of us hadn't been on a train before. You know, at least my age kids hadn't been on a train. And we took the train. It goes past Girdwood and Portage and stops for the day between Portage and Seward up in the mountains near Bartlett and Grandview Glaciers. And that first year I was probably 6th, 7th grade. I remember I went with my friends just to the nearby hillsides and we goofed around for hours and had a blast. Many of the people went up the train tracks and then up the river valley up to the glacier and actually on the glacier. So that was kind of a destination ski. It was the big tour of the year, and it still is. The Grandview no longer, the train no longer goes to Grandview. It now goes to Curry north of Anchorage between Talkeetna and Hurricane Gulch.
And it must have taken a year or two off during the pandemic.
Yeah, it hasn't been able to run for a couple years now. But
will it be back to
running
again?
I believe it's going to be back this year,
okay.
Hopefully, if the pandemic cooperates.
Yeah.
But it's a great event. At its highlight, we had, I think one year, there were 5 trains scheduled. Each train had about 500 people. So it's been a real big event. Because you have to be a member of Nordic to ride the ski train, I think that boosts our membership dramatically.
Yeah.
That and
yeah.
Tour of Anchorage, which is another big event. It's our ski marathon.
So it sounds like this is a way that the ski club gets people to be members, is hold out these enticements.
Exactly.
Like the ski
exactly.
train, and say you can't go on the ski train unless you're a member.
In fact, one year they decided not to make membership a requirement for the ski train, and the membership numbers plunged.
Oh, right.
And yeah. So they turned that around pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, one of the other things that the ski club does that's outside of Anchorage, we've been talking about a lot of things that happen in Anchorage, like track setting and that sort of thing. But you also have, the club has a couple of recreational cabins that I guess you can use.
That's
Is that right?
Yeah. One of our pioneers, Golda Whitaker, who produced the newsletter for 17 years early in the club's history. When she died, she left her little A-frame cabin at Hope to the club to use as a recreational cabin. At that time, we had been leasing the Manitoba cabin, which is now operated by Alaska Hut. So we had 2 huts originally, and then Gordon Wetzel, a former president of Nordic Club, and his wife Linda gave Nordic their cabin on Nancy Lake when they retired and moved out of state. So we've been fortunate to, part of your membership is that you can reserve stays at these cabins. They're well outfitted. There's boats at Nancy Lake you can use. There's lots of recreational opportunities around Hope. It's a hot spot right now. So that's a really good thing. Another part of the club that we haven't talked about is the newsletter. And the newsletter used to be just the Nordic Ski Club of Anchorage or Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. But Barry Johnson, when he was editor, decided that there's a lot going around the state of Alaska having to do with skiing, and so he invited all the other clubs like Fairbanks and Selcha and Kenai and Homer, Talkeetna, Matsu, to submit news to the newsletter. And the newsletter went from being the Nordic skier to the Alaska Nordic skier, and it still is to this day. Josh Neva is our editor, and he collects news from all the clubs like Girdwood and and beyond. He compiles the news so that there's one spot where people can find out what's happening in the state, what races might be in different places, or tours or events. And that's been great. I went to the Homer Epic one year, and I would have never found out about it except that I am a pretty good reader of the newsletter. Right.
And what is the Homer Epic?
It's a ski marathon in the spring that is, you know, Homer's one of the most beautiful places on Earth.
Yeah.
And you start up high on, I think it's West Ridge or East Ridge. And it goes on forever. It's a long, long race, but it's got some really fun whoopee downhills and some good climbs too. But it's an event worth going to. And then Fairbanks, of course, hosts the Sonat Kazoot. And Talkeetna has the Usyk, which is popular with my family because we have a cabin up there.
Makes it easy.
Yeah.
Well, in putting this book together, what do you think, what have you learned about the club that you didn't know before? You've been with this club for your entire life. The book starts, and our conversation started with you talking about your relationship with Russian Jack, where you learned to ski, and even before that, the big ski race that was put on down by Westchester Lagoon there. You've been with this club for a long time. What has the ski club meant to your life? Or is that something that has changed? Have you learned something new in writing the book that you didn't know before?
Lots. I mean, I think one of the big takeaways for me has been I knew the movers and shakers, but I had little idea how much they had done and how long they'd been doing it for. And just the interconnectedness of everything. And, you know, people didn't wear just one hat. They wore 10 hats. And every part of the club, I came from the racing end of the club. So I had to really delve into the nuts and bolts of touring and biathlon and jumping. And Junior Nordic I had been involved with, but you know, there was a time when I wasn't. And so in each case, you know, going through the old newsletters, talking to people, I was able to get a bigger picture of the thing.
Yeah. Is Anchorage Junior Nordic part of the ski club?
And that's very much worth noting. It hasn't always been part of the Nordic Ski Club, although many members have been involved with Junior Nordic over the years. Dr. Pete Muse was head of Junior Nordic for many years.
Yes.
Dirk Sisson, very involved with Junior Nordic. Junior Nordic is huge. It's the feeder program for everything to come after, you know, age five.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, you get the kids into skiing and it becomes a lifetime sport.
Last year they had, I think I have this number more or less right, they had a full program, both sessions, and 750 kids on a wait list.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so is it successful? I'll say.
Right.
It's
yeah.
And it was founded, you know, with the idea that skiing needs to be fun, you know, and that's what it is. Junior Nordic is all based around learning how to ski but having fun doing it. And the coaches are fabulous. They play games. They do all sorts of activities. They have three sites. They have a site at Russian Jack here. They have one at Kincaid and one at Hillside. And all three sites have, you know, a full range of coaches. The kids have different skill levels. The youngest kids often are polar cubs. Yep. And then they progress to otters, wolverines, and then the fast hawks.
Well, with these programs filling up the way they are and with the difficulty in getting into some of these clubs, and of course, this is a Junior Nordic question, not a question for you so much, but having written this book and I guess having a couple years of observing the progression and the history of this club and the problems that it's needed to deal with and how it solved those. Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas about where Anchorage goes from here
with
the club
that.
And the because it seems, you know, now we've got too many kids who want to be in,
right,
in junior Nordic,
right,
and
yeah,
we can't accommodate everybody. And of course, I think with the pandemic, the other thing we've seen is a lot of people getting out using the trails. There's more people out cycling. There's more people out skiing. Where does the club go from here, do you think? Do you have any ideas on that?
I do. And in fact, as I was talking to people, I finally thought, wouldn't it be fun to have a couple pages of people's wishes and dreams for the club? You know, what would we like to see going forward? And so I asked, I don't know, 12, 15 people to just jot down some thoughts, you know, just what would you really like to see? And I tried to ask a variety of different people. And they came up ideas, everything from a technical roller ski loop for the high-level skiers that need to get off the roads, which aren't safe anymore for roller skiing, to trail connections up into the park, to a warm-up hut at Hillside, to more parking access at different trailheads.
Right. So this is a sort of wish list of the...
Right.
Yeah.
And some of these things were thought of 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 30 years ago, and haven't quite happened yet, like access to Chugach State Park for grooming equipment. But if you get those ideas out, maybe somebody will go with it. And so there's a lot more we can do. We're not at the point right now at the club that we're building more trails, and it's gotten harder to do that. You have to go through a lot more red tape to get the clubs. It costs more to build them. However, you know, things like snowmaking at Hillside would be really nice. A bigger parking lot so that we could hold better races there.
Yeah. So it sounds like most of your what you're thinking is needed, based on what you've written in the book, is more infrastructure, perhaps, to accommodate more,
right,
more people, maybe.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Kincaid is a beautiful venue and a wonderful spot, but it's on the western part of town, and it doesn't always get the best snow.
Mm.
It sure would be nice to have something, you know, up in the park or Arctic Valley that could be a low snow year venue. We don't have that right now. We can go to Hatcher, but that is an hour drive.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Well, we're just about back here at the chalet, and I've really enjoyed going for this walk with you and you telling me about your first ski trail, the ski trail system where you learned to ski here at Russian Jack. The trail system here has certainly expanded since then, and so has the club.
Right.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, Alice. I'm Adam Verrier. I've been speaking with Alice Tower Knapp about the about her new book. It's called On Track, and it's about the Nordic Skiing Association of Anchorage. Thanks for joining me.
And
what did we find?
A golf ball.
A golf ball. So we end it with that. Well, I'm Adam Verrier. I'm your host today. I want to thank Eric Bork, the producer of the show. And thank you for joining us here on Outdoor Explorer, here on Alaska Public Radio. I'm Adam Verrier, and I'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.